Well, I'll tell you what, looking at this stand, again, just reminds me of the surprises that we experience at Christmas time. We love to surprise each other, don't we? We love to surprise our spouses and our children, and that's one of the neat things about Christmas time is it's full of surprises. It reminds me of a story one time. This may have happened even in a church like one you grew up in, but the church was having a children's Christmas pageant on the night before, the Sunday before Christmas, and so the church was packed on that Sunday night, and they had decided to reenact the story at the manger, and they had children acting it out. And there were these two boys at the church that were big rivals. They just could not get along. And one of the boys was just sure that he was going to get the coveted role of Joseph. I mean, he knew that he was going to get that role. And wouldn't you know it, when the time came and the selections were made, guess what? He got the role of the innkeeper, and he was pretty miffed about it. And he stewed about it. And do you ever sulk and stew? I've got to confess I do sometimes. And so he was really bent out of shape about it, wondering how he could get back at his rival who was going to play the part of Joseph. Well, he finally hatched a plan, but he didn't tell anyone, not even his parents, about it. And so the night came, and they had the play, and they were doing their part, and everything was just going great. The director of the play was just so proud of those children up there. And the time came for Joseph and Mary to come to the innkeeper. Now, I know this is our sanctified imagination, but you come to the innkeeper and ask if you can stay, and he's supposed to say there's no room in the inn. Well, that time came, and the guy had this gruff look on his face, his arms were crossed, and Joseph comes up to him, and he asks the question. He says, is there any room for me to stay in your inn? The guy uncrosses his arms, smiles great big, and says, sure, come on in. Joseph didn't know what to do. It kind of took him back, and so he had to improvise and think on his feet. And suddenly a thought came to his mind, and so the next lines out of his mouth were, come on, Mary, I'm not going to let any wife of mine stay in a dump like this. Let's head to the barn. So be careful. Later tonight or tomorrow, you may be surprised. Hopefully it's a good surprise. This is a good surprise. Hey, I want you to know that no matter what you're going through, you may not realize this, but God has some good surprises in store for you. God is for you. He's not against you. And God loves you. And one reason why I can say with certainty that God has some good surprises in store for you, no matter what you're experiencing, is because Jesus said, I am the light of the world. I like to think about that anytime we have a candlelight service. He said in John chapter 8 and verse 12, I am the light of the world. Anyone who follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I don't know about you, but I appreciate light. I can't see squat in the dark. I can't see y'all right now. When I'm driving, it's dark. A lot of times my wife will get on to me. Didn't you see that? Didn't you see that stop sign back there, or that red light? No, it's not that bad. I promise. You don't have to dodge when I'm coming. But I really do. I've always struggled to see it at night, even when I was a kid. And so I really appreciate the light. Any of you that have been over in Africa on one of our mission trips, you know how precious the light is. Well, if you don't have a flashlight or something handy, you're in trouble over there. And so light is pretty important. And, you know, it's interesting how we continue to get better light. You know, I went to Walmart, and I was doing some purchases, and I found these light bulbs. And it amazes me. I was looking on the side. I hadn't noticed how long these bulbs last, but it kind of caught my attention. This one right here in my left hand says 13-year life. I don't know if I totally believe that or not, but 13 years. I was thinking, if you're pregnant right now, if you're a lady out here and you're pregnant, you could put this light in your child's room and not have to change it again until he's in middle school. Isn't that amazing to think about? Or it could burn out after about 9 or 10 years and you take it back to Walmart, right? With your receipt, got to have your receipt, and you got to say, hey, I'm sorry, this didn't last 13 years, and they'd probably give you a refund. I don't know. That may not be a surprise in your future. This one says 22 years. 22 years. That means you could put your child through college before you have to change the light in his room. Well, that's pretty impressive. But that's not as impressive as another light that I read about just recently. It's called the Centennial Light. You're going to see it up here on the screen. This Centennial Light is over 117 years old. And it's still burning to this day. It's at a fire station in Livermore, California. Now, that's pretty impressive, isn't it? It's been burning after all these years. Well, I want you to know that's nothing compared to the eternal, everlasting light of the world, who is Jesus Christ. He's the light that never goes out, and He's the light that is shining in your world today, whatever it is you're experiencing and facing. And so as we look at the familiar story in Luke chapter 2 tonight, I want you to think about the light of the world in light of that. Because really, I think that's what Luke is trying to convey. When he talks about the glory of the angels shining around about, and how the shepherds were really scared over that, and how he talks about how, behold, I bring you today good news of great joy. He's talking about the light of the world that has come to change your world and mine. But you know what? Sometimes we look at the Christmas story and we don't see what it was really like. You know, we have these really beautiful manger scenes and everything seems just pristine and precious and special. And I love those manger scenes, don't get me wrong. But did you ever stop to think that that's really not what the manger scene was like? I mean, really, the real manger was cold and dark, and it was a difficult time for Mary and Joseph, and they were afraid and uncertain. Honestly, if you could talk to them at that point in time, they would probably tell you that nothing was going right. Everything seemed wrong in their world at that time. Listen to what it says in Luke chapter 2 and see if you can get into their world as we read and think about the birth of Jesus in Luke chapter 2. This is the Christmas story according to Luke. Remember, if you come to the church here regularly, you know we've already talked about the Christmas story according to Paul and according to Matthew. And yesterday we looked at the Christmas story according to John. Tonight we're looking at Luke's Christmas story. Luke says, in those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that the whole empire should be registered. Folks, that's not a good thing right there. In fact, that's a bad thing. Because that means that Joseph and Mary, who was very pregnant, had to be inconvenienced. They had to leave their home in Nazareth. And yes, it was only about a 90-mile journey, but it was a long journey and a difficult journey on a donkey or otherwise. And if you've ever seen the Nativity story, you know how difficult it was. And so it was very inconvenient. But they were registered, and this first registration took place while Quirinius was governing Syria. So everyone went to be registered, each to his own town. Joseph went up from the town of Nazareth to Galilee, to Judea, to the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and the family line of David, to be registered along with Mary, who was engaged to him and was pregnant. And while they were there, they're not at home, they're not staying in a nice plush hotel somewhere, they're in a very difficult situation in a difficult time in the history of their people, and while they were there, the time came for her to give birth. I don't know where you are right now in your life, but maybe the time has come for a birth to occur in your life, for you to be born again, or for you to receive the new birth of Jesus Christ in your life. The time had come for her to give birth. And then notice the circumstances. Verse 7. Then she gave birth to her firstborn son, and she wrapped him tightly in cloth and laid him in a manger, or a feeding trough, in a cave, or a place where they housed livestock, because there was no room for him in the inn. I think what the story is conveying to us through Luke, really through the Holy Spirit, is that the light of the world shines for you when your circumstances are difficult, and it even seems like things are out of control. You ever wonder if Joseph and Mary thought that things were spinning out of control at this moment? You wonder if they ever asked the question, why? Why are we going through this? Why now, Lord? Why do we have to have a census right now? Why do I have to have the child right now? Why are things so out of control? You know what? It could seem like things are out of control in your life today and tonight, but I want you to be assured God is in control, because the light is shining, the light of life, the light of the world is shining on you tonight. Second thing I see as we read on is this scene that takes place with the shepherds. Now again, I want you to understand, a shepherd, that was not where people wanted to be in that day and that time. Little Jewish boys didn't dream of being a shepherd when they grew up. Shepherds had no position or standing in society. They were in a dead-end job. They couldn't they couldn't give a testimony in a court of law. They couldn't go to the temple and worship or involve themselves in the festivals. They were really considered people that were beneath the rest of society. They were on the low end of the totem pole. And so, who is it that God sent the angels to first? The lowest and the least likely. Let's continue on in the story. Verse 8. In that same region, meaning near Bethlehem, shepherds were staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock. And then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were terrified. I can't imagine what that would have been like for them, but I guarantee you that when you see an angel or a heavenly host of angels, you're going to be terrified, and I would be terrified. Verse 10, but the angel said to them, don't be afraid, for look, I proclaim to you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. Do you know that the message of salvation is for all kinds of people? It's for everybody. No one is excluded. Nobody is out of the realm of possibility of receiving this good news of Jesus Christ. I came across this a few years ago, and I love it so much that I try to read it just about every year at Christmas time. But I love this statement that I got this from another pastor, and he said that there's a lot of people who think that Jesus is just for certain people. He wants you to know that Jesus is for everyone. And so he used the letters of the alphabet to convey this message to his congregation. And it went something like this. Jesus came for artists and astronauts, aerospace engineers and accordion players, airline pilots and athletes, acrobats and accountants, especially during tax season. Jesus came for people from Africa and Albania and Alaska, and for people who are absent-minded and awkward and assertive, and authoritarian people and antisocial people and aggravating people. He came for animal rights activists and adulterers and abusers and alcoholics, and that's just getting started. Jesus came for babies and boys and bankers and band teachers and ballerinas and biology teachers and bird watchers and bus drivers and bookworms and bachelors and basketball players and botanists. He came for bowlers and baby boomers and beekeepers and blondes and brunettes and even people with blue hair. He came for bosses and braggarts and bartenders and brats and people with braces and Baptists. And Jesus even came for Britney Spears, even though she did it again. He came for children and Cubans and Caucasians and Czechs and Californians and Cambodians and Cherokees and Comanches and Cajuns. He came for cooks and cops and clowns and comedians and even people who have cats. That's some serious love. Don't throw anything at me. You're going to take the pulpit back from me. He came for Catholics and charismatics and congregationalists and congressmen and cooks and creeps and cheaters who listen to country music songs about cheaters. Look, I don't have enough time to read this all night, and I know you've got places to be, but you get the picture. Jesus came for everybody, even shepherds. And so the light of the world, it just reminds me, the light of the world shines for you when your past seems to follow you, and you have been written off by the world. Weren't they written off by the world? But God came to them. God didn't forget about them. Then we read the rest of the story, verse 15. When the angel had left them after giving them the news, the shepherds said to one another, let's go straight to Bethlehem and see what has happened. Let me just pause right there and say, if you don't know Christ, investigate the claims of Christ. Don't just go on hearsay. Don't just go on what you think you believe about Christians. I've heard so many people say Christians are hypocrites and they're all messed up. Well, look, don't rely on a hypocrite. Go to Jesus. Find out who Jesus is. And so they hurried off and they found both Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. And after seeing them, verse 17, they reported the message they were told about this child. You see what they did? They went and saw for themselves. They experienced Christ. And then they went and told other people. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to be witnesses of who Jesus is. And it says in verse 18, all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds said to them. See, God came to shepherds first. Shepherds were the outcast. And that just reminds me that God is for us. He's not against us. Don't be afraid of what God wants to do in your life. He may be stretching you right now, but He's got a good plan for your life. And His news is good news of great joy. He's got good news for you tonight. God told them exactly where and how to find the light. There's only one way to God. It's through Jesus Christ. And listen, the King of the universe has invited you to come to the party. What are you waiting on? Come and join and find out what it's all about. But then I want you to notice the last thing of this passage tonight, verses 19 and 20. In verse 19 and 20, we see Mary and we see the shepherds. And do you ever think about what Mary, what was running through her mind? I would love to have been a fly on the wall just to know what she was thinking during all this time. And again, we've talked about how difficult it was for her where she gave birth, where she was at that moment in time. And yet, I know that Mary had a peace and a joy in her heart during this season, during this difficult time in her life. And that just reminds me that if you're in a difficult season in your life right now, you can still have peace and joy. The joy of the Lord can be your strength. And you don't have to be afraid. You may not have all your questions answered. Your circumstances may not have changed. But you can still have joy and peace in your heart. Look at it right here, or listen to me right here in this text. In verse 19. But Mary was treasuring up all of these things in her heart. And she was meditating on them. And basically, Mary is seeing what's going on. Even though she may still have questions, she may still see that nothing has really changed, she's still got some tough days ahead. But she's rejoicing because she knows that God has come through. She knows that what that angel said is exactly right. Nothing is impossible with God. And so she's meditating about all these things that have happened to her. From the time the angel gave her the message that she was going to carry God's son, right up until now when these shepherds are coming in. And more things are going to happen. What about the shepherds? Well, notice what it says in verse 20. It says, the shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all the things they had seen and heard, which were just as they had been told. Now again, had anything changed in their lives? Nope. Still in a dead-end job. Still didn't have any status in society. Nobody really thought any differently about them. And they went back to those jobs, but they were changed. They were different on the inside. They were rejoicing and praising God because of what they had seen, what they had heard, what they had discovered. And so, they're treasuring these things. I guess the last thing I'd say tonight, my last point, is the light of the world shines when your situation remains unchanged, and yet you find your heart filled with peace and joy. I love that. Because, you know, life isn't easy. Jesus didn't promise an easy life here. Some of you are going through some really hard times. But you don't know how you minister to this pastor and to this congregation and to this community when you deal with your struggles and trials with grace and peace. God will give you that. He'll give you that strength if you'll let Him. And so, basically, I guess I want to close with a story that I heard. This is from a guy named Bill Adams about another Christmas scene, another Christmas story. And it's interesting. He was talking about how they had, again, had a Christmas play at their church. This time it was a youth group. That's even scarier than children's group. But the youth group was leading the children, the Christmas story. And they had all the parts. They had shepherds. They had wise men. They had angels. They had a manger. But Jesus was this. They didn't have a baby Jesus. So they got this clever idea to use a light bulb to be Jesus. And so they had carefully placed the light bulb in the manger. Well, everything was going just fine. And the play was working just like it was supposed to. Until some wise guy who was in the play, I think it might have been a shepherd, Might have been a wise man, I don't know. But anyway, he wanted to crack a wisecrack, and so he said it. Now the crowd couldn't hear it, but the rest of the cast could hear it. And he said, "Hey Joe, when are you going to pass out the cigars?" And do you know Mary got tickled? And she started to laugh, and then Joseph started to laugh, and then some of the angels started to laugh. And there was a young lady who was an angel standing on a chair, and she started laughing so hard that the chair collapsed and she fell. And her wings fell off, and she knocked down some other parts and props. And pretty soon, the whole set was chaos. Everything was torn up, except the light, which continued to shine in the manger. And this is what Bill Adams said, and I want to quote him here because I love what he said. He said, "The only thing that didn't go to pieces was that light bulb in the manger. It never stopped shining." And then Bill Adams made this comparison, which I think I want to leave you with tonight. He said, "My dear friends in Christ, that baby in the manger is the light of the world. And even when my world is broken and in shambles, the light still shines." Does the light shine in you tonight? Does the light shine in me? You know, if it does, we have a responsibility. We are Christ's ambassadors. And I want to mention to you that not only did Christ say that he is the light of the world, but he also said in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, and we're gonna act this out in just a moment. We're gonna show this in an example here in this service. He said in Matthew chapter 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, "You are the light of the world," talking about his followers, people who are believers in Jesus Christ. "A city situated on a hill cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, but rather on a lampstand, and it gives light for all who are in the house." Now listen to these last words of Jesus. Jesus said in the same way, "Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works." And what do they do with those good works? Do they put you up on a pedestal? No. Jesus said, "So that they will give glory to your Father in heaven." See, what we are is we are reflectors of the one true light. And so tonight we're going to close out this service by the lighting of these candles. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to light a candle. And I've got some other guys that are coming and they're going to help you light candles, because that's what we do. As we receive the light, as reflectors of the light, we share the light with others who are around us. And so when everyone has had a chance to have their candle lit, we'll remember that we are reflectors of the great light of Christ, the light of the world. And we will pray together, and then we're going to sing a closing song tonight, and we'll be dismissed.